This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Our way, with yours truly, Paul Anka, and my buddy, Skip Bronson, is a production of iHeartRadio. Hi, folks. This is Paul Anka.
And my name is Skip Bronson. We've been friends for decades, and we've decided to let you in on our late-night phone calls by starting a new podcast.
And welcome to Our Way. We'd like you to meet some real good friends of ours.
They're leaders in entertainment and sports.
Innovators in business and technology, and even a sitting president or two.
Join us as we ask the questions they've not been asked before, tell it like it is, and even sing a song or two.
This is our podcast, and we'll be doing it our way.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Skip. Well, what do you think, my buddy? We're going to have Brother Steve on this podcast. I can't believe it. Can you?
No. You know, look, you and I know Steve when you know him longer than I do. I know him 40 years, and you, how long do you know him?
Well, I know him since I met him at the Fountain Blue with his grandmother. Then out in Vegas, he was my neighbor. I've known him for years. I know him very, very well. Traveled together, hung together, worked for him. Know the man well, so it's gonna be kind of easy for me because I don't think we're gonna have enough time to really cover everything, and he's gonna give us some amazing in-depth answers because that's how brilliant he is. But I think you've worked for him, so you know what to touch upon, what subject to touch with him too. Where are you gonna go with it, you think?
Well, you know, one of the things I want to do is you are one of the great practical jokers of all time. I have to say, I hate being the victim of them, though. Most people would be flattered and think it's great. I fucking hate it. But, hopefully you'll get into some of the things that you've done to him because you've gotten him so badly. Maybe you can touch on that.
Yeah, I'll hit the humor spot.
Look, everybody knows what he did. He took Las Vegas to a whole new level. I think there should be a statue of him on the Las Vegas Strip. Because when he first created the Mirage and spent $600 or $700 million, no one had ever spent a fraction of that. And that really started the entire renaissance in Las Vegas. It got everybody else to up their game. But I've never really, as close as I am to him, I've never really asked him about the inspiration. You know, why? What made you want to do that? So I think that's what I'd like to touch on.
He set the new tone. You know, I was there back when the boys ran it. And obviously, no one had the vision that Steve had. And you look at what he's done on the landscape of Vegas today. And everybody keeps coming second to him anyway. Everybody. They don't know how to build. They don't know how to design the way that he has and the kind of class.
How about his obsession with German Shepherds? He's had so many of those dogs. It kept people like me fearful. You know, they talk about Biden's dog and how many people the dog bit. I mean, Steve's dogs.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
I always gave those dogs plenty of room. I never wanted to get too close to them, but they were scary.
No, they were well trained. He had them trained in Germany, and you know, it was ach and uch and ech, and they listened.
Yeah.
Well, it should be cool, man. It should be cool. Yeah. He's got a lot to say. He hasn't worked in, what, 6 years there?
No, it's longer.
Yeah, I'm just curious to ask him. You can ask him if he misses it. I think he'll give you a real honest answer.
I miss it. When I go back there and I walk into the casino and I see all the old guys and the casino hosts come up to me, and I miss it. I don't know that he does, but we can certainly touch on that. That'll be a good topic.
Oh, it'll be fun. It'll be talking to a brother, you know that.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, so have some dinner and we'll hit him tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. I'll see. We're actually going to do it at his house.
His studio. I told him to go down in his studio, you know, the theater where it's quiet.
Yeah.
We'll get some real, it'll be real good for sound down there. It'll be quiet with no interruption and be easy for him, obviously, and we'll get a free dinner out of it, I think.
Yeah, after that, we'll have dinner. We'll have some more laughs. It'll be great. All right, man. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Take care. Love to Edie.
Thanks. Same to Michelle. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
I understand that Paul Anka's on this show.
He is?
Really? Love that guy.
I want to meet him. You know, when I was 16, 17, I was probably the luckiest teenager in the world. Hit records, I'm traveling everywhere. And I start working Copacabana, where you had to start, and then you'd wind up in Vegas. So there I am in Vegas, I'm with the Rat Pack, hanging with these guys. And from there, you'd go to the Fontainebleau in Florida. Now that was more glamorous, it was on the ocean, and it drew everybody from New York. It was the place, right? So I'm working Vegas, working the Fontainebleau, and there was a grandmother who used to bring her young little grandchild, grandson, actually. Her name was Rachel. And she'd bring him to the Fontainebleau so he'd get a taste of the entertainment business, you know, get what it was all about. And this grandson of hers, on one occasion after being at the Fontainebleau for a few times, he looked up at the building and he said to Rachel, Rachel, as her friends used to call her, Rachel, that's what I want to do. I want to build hotels like that when I get older. And that's exactly what that kid did and has been doing. He's become a friend of mine, a brother by another mother. He then moved out to Nevada. This kid that I met at the Fontainebleau, where I'm 6 months older than he was, we became neighbors. And I realized when I first met him, this was someone that, like me, was a perfectionist. Anything that he was going to do. I was so enthralled with him. And that kid's name, folks, was Steve Wynn. And he's our guest today. And I've got to tell you, this isn't Skip and I sitting here looking at a bunch of notes. This is somebody we've loved and adored and have known for many, many years. And you're going to listen to one of the brilliant minds that I've ever been exposed to. Mr. Wynn, welcome to Our Way.
How are we supposed to follow such a lovely... Thanks, Bellini.
You're welcome, Bellini.
Bellini.
Yeah.
We've called each other Bellini for 25 years, 30 years. We've known each other since we're both 19. And he was not only 6 months older, he was the star of the Fontainebleau, along with Frank Sinatra, Johnny Mathis, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis. You know, it was the number one nightclub. It was the Copacabana in New York, the Sands in Las Vegas, and the Fontainebleau in the 50s and the late 50s and 60s in Miami Beach. And Paul was seventeen years old in 1959. We were both 17. I was graduating high school. He was a star at the Fontainebleau. And I think he had just come from the Sands in Las Vegas. So there was this my mother and father and my grandmother, Rachel, who had come from Poland years before but lived with us. She was this really dyed-in-the-wool, enthusiastic member of the Polyhanka. She called him Polyhanka, as if it was H-A-N-K-A. And she would say, "Stephen, Polyhanka is at the Fontainebleau." I said, I know, Grandma. We should go to see Polyhanka. And my father and mother and my grandmother, we went to see Polyhanka. And it was not unusual to look at a stage and see a Sammy Davis or a Frank Sinatra or Dean Martin. They were, after all, 25 years older than us. But to go to the number one nightclub, one of the top three performing places for performing artists in America, and see a guy that was your age, that didn't compute. Even Johnny Mathis was older than us.
Mm-hmm, still is.
But you were only 17 years old as a headliner in 58, 59. And that was something I had to process. But it was great, you know, put your head on my shoulder. Diana, puppy love. I mean, all of it was so great. And the point is, you could do it live just like it sounded on the radio. You didn't need any equipment or engineers. All you guys, Sinatra, Martin, Johnny Mathis, and Frank, and Dean, they could stand up in front of a microphone and just do it. And they could be in a crowded nightclub where people were drinking or promoting their girlfriend, and then the certain kind of person. And you can't train anybody. It's almost a gift. But whatever that person does, when they talk, the crowd hushes. The room goes quiet, and everybody's head turns to the man or woman in the light. And some of the most wonderful performers, they get up and they have beautiful voices. But yet, the crowd kept talking. The conversations at the tables didn't change. And then a guy like Sinatra, or Martin, or Sam Davis, or Paul at 19, stood up and said hello, and the noise in the room and the band struck up the first chords and first few bars, and all of a sudden the room went quiet, and everybody was now being entertained. And I witnessed that when I was young, coupled with the glamour of all the beautiful people in the beautiful lobby, walking in down the shops in the basement, going at the beautiful pool with the cabanas and the gardens that you walked across. And the Fontainebleau and people like Sinatra and Anka and those kind of people, that was better than the real world. Inside that building, it was magical. As Joel Grey says in the opening number of the movie Cabaret, inside, everything is beautiful. The girls are beautiful. Even the band is beautiful. Leave your troubles outside. And the Fontainebleau is a magic place.
Well, a magic country. You know, you think you go back to your grandparents, all of us, you know, they landed in this country for the dream, right? And when they came here, none of those people were making money. These people came. They struggled, and all of a sudden, when they did acquire money and they went out, you know, from post-war, they appreciated what they saw. These were hardworking people that evolved into this country, right into the entertainment complex. And they were fascinating to see those people, how much they cared. They worked hard, and that was our audience, unlike today.
You make that point. I've got our grandparents and stuff. You know, you came from Canada, so your children are firstborn Americans. But my grandparents, my mother and father, and that whole generation born during World War I, just before and during World War I, they were all firstborn Americans, and they came from impoverished families, immigrants that came through Ellis Island, and they struggled in places like Boston and New York in the big metropolitan cities of the Northeast. And then they came of age. If they're born, my parents were born in 1914. Frank was, Sinatra and Dean were both born in 1915. They all came of age in 1932, right into the Great Depression. So they grew up dirt poor. None of them graduated high school. They were working when they were 15 or 16 years old. They bump into the Great Depression in the 30s. And then if they don't get drafted into the war in 40, 41, then they had defense jobs. So the country is on its butt. They're worried about the Nazis and the Japanese. And the war ends in 44 and 45. And everybody comes home from the war. And everybody is now 30 years old. And for the first time in their life, there's peace and an open road in front of them. And we bump into the greatest period of prosperity. Now, what's important, that you just reminded me, and the reason I'm bringing this up, is that these people had never had any money whatsoever, no excess disposable income, but they had seen, heard on the radio or read in magazines about the good life, living big, going to New York, going to the Copacabana, going to baseball games, having a Cadillac, a diamond ring, a mink stole, and maybe even going to Las Vegas. But to go to New York, to stay in a hotel on Broadway, my parents, the Taft Hotel, to go to Yankee Stadium, was living big. And so we've noticed, and this is especially true in Macau, anywhere in the world, this real strong consumerism, this desire to try the things you've only dreamt about because you've finally got a buck to do it, is a sign of first-generation wealth.
Yes. And same game, Vegas, Macau.
There's no old money in China. All these guys that were gambling with us all during the last 20 years, 25 years, they're all brand new money. Our parents, our grandparents, when they came here, never did see any money, but their children, our parents, the people born in before 1920, they made sure that their kids had the best of everything. And they made sure that they could, and you know, you have a different attitude towards money when you're the first one in your history of your family to ever make it. You say, well, wait a minute, I've survived. I overcame poverty and everything else. I made this money on my own, so I can afford to do what I want with it. I'm going to try the things I've dreamt about, and I'll make more money. So if I lose it playing blackjack in Las Vegas, or I squander it going to New York and going to nightclubs, things are not strictly productive activity. Why not? I've earned the right to do it. When you get to second generation wealth, first of all, our generation, we got to go to college. We got to drive a car. We had the best of everything. The people born between 1938, 1940, and beyond, the baby boomers, we bumped into the greatest period in world history between 1950 and 1955, 60, and even reach its peak in 80 to 2010 and 15. Nothing but bigger, better. Everything was no anxiety. Cold War came to an end. Russia, the Soviet Union collapsed. And boy, oh boy, we're sitting here today talking to one of you and Skip and I. Things sure have changed. My, my.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
And your first time when you hit Vegas with your dad, that's a wild story. Reminisce about that. To where you finally make your first move at a casino.
Father was in the bingo business. And he had a friend that he grew up with in Revere, Massachusetts, named Arthur Rosen. And Arthur Rosen had a bingo. He had rented the second floor of the Silver Slipper and had a bingo game. So he's making a living, but the Golden Nugget downtown didn't like the idea that people were going to the Silver Slipper up in the across from the Desert Inn, which was just a casino. Like downtown Las Vegas, didn't have any rooms. Silver Slipper Saloon and bingo on the second floor. And the people at the Golden Nugget, which were the main powerhouse in downtown Las Vegas, the Golden Nugget, they had been there since 1946, and they didn't like the idea that people were going to the Silver Slipper and playing bingo when they could have been playing slot machines at the Golden Nugget. So they opened a bingo hall to compete with the Silver Slipper, and just gave everything free that they were charging for. And Arthur Rosen called my father in Utica, New York, and asked him to come out and help him figure out how to promote it and compete. My father went out for a month, and after 2 weeks called my mom. And I was, it was 1952, I was 10. And he said, send Stevie out. And my mother put me on a Colonial Airline plane in Utica, New York, to flew to Chicago Midway Airport, and then United Airlines from Chicago to Denver to Las Vegas. And I was by myself in my little suitcase. And I liked being independent. And my father picked me up, and I got off a plane in 1952 to Las Vegas that was early Las Vegas. Just the desert in seven or eight places. If you walked in front of the Flamingo, the sands, or the dunes of the Desert Inn, there was no sidewalk. there was edge of the road, curb of the road, and sand. And behind those hotels was desert.
More sand.
There was nothing else.
Yeah.
And I went and stayed with my dad in the Frontier Hotel, which was next to the Silver Slipper. And between the two places was the Frontier Village. They made a village, to, just like in a movie, a Western Main Street with a place to tie up the horses. And at the end of the street, like a cap, was a stable where you could rent horses to go riding. And my dad and I, we'd rent horses every day and go out in the desert. And they had a shooting gallery there in the town and a saloon. You could go in there for milkshakes and stuff and shoot a rifle in a shooting gallery. And we go ride horses in the desert. And it was so cool. But that lasted for 10 days. And then we went home and back to Utica for another 20 years or so.
What an aesthetic change, right? All that years. Sand and blue sky back to the East Coast.
Back to Utica. And then after college was a new story. Mike, my father, died. He was 49 years old. He died on the table in heart surgery at the University of Minnesota. He had rheumatic fever. He had an enlarged heart. And they didn't have heart replacements then. And so they couldn't fix him. And he was in late. He was having heart failure. And they tried to save him. And he died on the table. And I was maybe 3 weeks since my 21st birthday. And I was about a month away from graduating from college in Philadelphia. And all of a sudden, it was eeny, meeny, miny, and there was no mo. I had my mom, my girlfriend, my 10-year-old brother, and it was da-da-da-da-da-da, you're on. And then the rest of my life from that point on, when I was 21, was something that where I was sort of had to figure it out for myself, which was not a bad thing. I mean,
which you had to do, yeah.
21 years old enough to take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
Should be, anyway.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the way I met the two of you. It was 1984. I was living in Connecticut where I grew up, and I had a shopping center development company and had made enough money to get myself a place at La Costa Golf Resort, northern San Diego County. And one day, one of the owners, Irwin Malasky, came up to me and said, "Listen, you're a good golfer, right?" I said, "Yeah, pretty good." He said, "Well, I got a guy coming over from Las Vegas. He just took up the game. I really want you to meet him, so I want you to take him out and play golf." And I thought, oh, my God, that's anathema to a good golfer. Somebody just took up the game. Are you kidding me? I said, "Well, what if I, like, have a drink with him?" "No, you're going to take him and play golf." So, of course, because he was one of the owners and you had to always be in good shape with him, you and I went out and played golf. It was you and your brother and myself, and just hit it off, had the greatest time. And you said to me, "Connecticut, this is great. You know, my daughter is going to go to Yale, and I'm going to be all the way out in Las Vegas. Maybe you keep an eye on her." I said, "Oh, yeah, that no problem." And just sort of hit it off. We just had a great time. And 2 years later, I was in Las Vegas for a shopping center convention, and I figured, you know what? I'm going to call Steve Wynn. He probably won't even remember me, but I'll just take a shot. So I called your office, went through three people, finally got you on the phone. And you said, "You're kidding me. You're here in Las Vegas. You didn't call me to tell me you're coming." "And where are you staying?" I said, "The Hilton." "The Hilton? What are you doing at the Hilton?" I said, "Well, it's next to the convention center. I'm here for a shopping center convention." You said, "Pack up your stuff. Somebody's going to be there 20 minutes to pick you up. You're going to stay downtown at the Golden Nugget." I said, "You know, Steve, that's really kind, but it's just not convenient. You know, I'm right next door to the convention center." You said, "Well, I'm going to have cars available to drive you over to the convention center or anywhere you want to go 24/7. Just come on over here. Somebody will be there in 20 minutes. There was no talking you out of it. So I got packed up, and guy picks me up in a stretch limo, takes me to Las Vegas. They take me to the front desk. They hand me the key. The bellman takes me up, and I get into a suite, two stories. It looks like something out of a movie set. I'd never seen anything like this. It was like, you know, Dean Martin as Matt Helm in one of those movies. The most incredible suite I had ever seen. I'd never even seen pictures of anything like this. And I said, "Wow, this is crazy." And that night, as it turns out, you were tied up and Paul Anka was performing at the Golden Nugget. So I went to see Paul Anka perform.
Paul had a residence in those days.
Yeah, I said,
it was great.
This is just crazy.
He'd work 12, 14 weeks a year.
Almost didn't work there after that. You want to hear the craziest story? I'm going to bait my friend over here.
Oh, what a story.
So I'm loving it down there. And everybody's talking about him, the Golden Nugget, the whole town. Here's
we built
this
a room
kid.
For him. We built a nightclub cabaret.
Yeah, like for me, Sinatra, and where everybody's happy. And they can't believe that this jewel is downtown that Steve put together, right? With a sign of what was to come. So I'm working there and I'm loving it. Sinatra and I, everybody's happy. And my deal runs out and I've got to make a new deal. Right. And I was kind of running my own show back then. So I call my brother up and I say,
yeah, on the strip, the wages that you could make in those bigger rooms that had more seats were two or three times what I could afford on Fremont Street.
Right. And I call Steve and I say, Steve, we got to talk about a new deal. You take it from there. You're our guest. Go.
So Sinatra is making 50, 75, 80,000 a show. And Anka and Guys and Martin in those days would be that level of wages. You know, 50 grand a show was a big star. He's making $20,000 or $25,000 a week, and he's doing the 12 shows. He says, listen, we're pals. I love it down here. It's great. But Steve, I got 5 daughters. I can't, you know, I'm working so much at the hotel. I'm here, you know. A lot. I'm here a fourth of the year. It's home and all that. And I love it because I live in Las Vegas. He's talking about himself. But I need to make more money. I said, Paul, geez, you know, I don't make any money. We lose money to have you here because the room's small. It's great for the audience that can touch you. I mean, it's really old time intimate to have a big star that close, but I can't afford it. And I know you're making a sacrifice for me. I know that this is a gift. But look, I'm feeling guilty about it. And remember, we lived next door to one another. We're neighbors. He had 5 daughters. I had 2. We used to go on vacation. We had 9 women and 2 guys.
That's another
story. It's the truth. We'd go on vacation and 2 families together. It's all women. Anyway, I said, go ahead and take the job. They want you to work at Caesar's Palace. I can't ask you to do this. It's not fair to you, and really it's not fair to the joint here to lose more money. We're on the phone, this exchange. Is that your final word? He gets real quiet, sort of pathetic. Is that your final word? That's what you're going to tell me? I said, well, Bellini, I can't help it. I think that's the bottom line. Okay, goodbye. So, just like that, not angry. Okay, goodbye. Well, what happened next is one of those moments when you love Las Vegas and the crazy people that make it up. My secretary, Joyce Luman, comes into my room, my office, and I have one of those offices with 2 doors, you know, but you locked one, you only open one half of the double door. But she comes in and she's got a red face, like she's controlling herself. And she unclips the door that was anchored and pushes it against the wall and then opens the other door so that the double doors for the first time are open. And all of a sudden, 2 emergency guys in white suits, like in a hospital, pushing a gurney with a blood transfusion tower above it with plasma hanging on it and tubes going in to a figure all in, wrapped up in bandages, the entire face except for the mouth and the eyes, totally bandaged, hands, everything, like a mummy. A person's been in a terrible, terrible accident, and he's on the gurney with the blood transfusion tube going in his arm, and there's a note pinned on the top of the body. It says, okay, do what you want with me. What'd you actually say?
I said, I give up. Do what you want.
Do it to me. What difference it make? Right. Well,
and we signed
the whole floor of the executives had to come and see it. You had to see it.
Do you still have the picture?
He hired.
Do you have the picture still?
We do somewhere.
Gotta love
he hired an ambulance. He hired the biggest emergency operation, had himself all bandaged, prepared, and had himself brought down in the ambulance. They took the gurney through the lobby of the Golden Nugget, down the whole corridor with the shops, onto the elevator, up to the top floor where the offices were. Oh, and everybody that worked up there got a laugh that day, that maniac. Well, of course, that was the end of the conversation about the money. We had a surrender. So we'll lose a little more money. We'll make it back somehow. Anyway, that's one of the many. Paul's sort of famous for tricks. He's a prankster. And he has done some of the wildest things that ever. Some of them can't be used without getting bleeped on the air. But
well, we can do it here. When you talked about us traveling together, which we did, we showed up.
You want
to
tell them about how we got to be believed?
When we landed in Venice, we got all the girls.
You're going to tell the story?
And we're at the Cipriani.
Fancy.
Which is, for those of you out there, is a very exclusive little island, limited in rooms, but well appointed in everything you'd ever want. And
the two best suites in the joint are on the pool on the edge of the island.
And we show up. First night, we blow the whole place out because all the girls started using their dryers right from the get-go. So we blow that out. But Steve and I got into the vibe, and we're sitting
girls want to go shopping. They're into touring, you know, walking on the bridges in Venice.
And we're sitting by the pool. We got into a vibe of cigars and Bellinis. That's where I got my nickname.
We're drinking peach juice and champagne at Bellini. Fresh peach juice in Italy. White peach juice.
We're having a great stay. And as you're having fun in life, it goes very quickly. And I know we're leaving the next day.
And just, that's how we got the nicknames, because our wives called us the Bellini brothers. Anyway, it's stuck.
So I call Steve, and I'm going to let you finish it, knowing that we're leaving the next day.
The airplane. We had a plane. My plane was a DC-9. And all of us could fly on this plane. It's like an airliner equipped with furniture for a private plane. But the airport, you know, the airport's on a different island everything's different islands in Venice. But so the water taxi is arranged to take us at 10:30 to go cross and then take off for the United States. It's the end of our 3 weeks in Europe. We're going home from Italy at noon. And we got to get up, pack everything, get ready, leave by 9:30 or 10, and get to take the water taxi over. It's a little bit of a schlep, and you got to handle all the baggage. We got a lot of bags. 3 weeks, 9 women, 2 guys. Anyway, we're getting ready for dinner. 6:00, I'm in my room. My wife is getting changed and ready if we're going to go out to dinner in Venice. Phone rings, and an Italian guy says to me, "Signor Wynn, this is
Tony Rufilio."
Who?
Tony Rufilio at the front desk.
I am the manager at the front desk here of the Cipriani. He's very nice. I hope that you and Mrs. Wynn and Mr. Anka are having a very good time. So we're having a wonderful time. We hate to leave. So, Miss Signor Wynn, we have a problem. I would like to speak to you. You know, you and Mr. Anka have the two best group of rooms in this hotel, in the Cipriani. And of course, everybody books this hotel in advance. And tomorrow, for their annual 2 weeks, these rooms are booked by any names. Sheikh
Abdul Khulli.
Yeah, all these guys from Saudi Arabia or Kuwait. And they're coming on their jets, and they arrive, Signor Wynn, at 8:30 tomorrow. Yeah, so, but Signor Wynn, you and Mr. Anka are scheduled to leave Cipriani at 10:30. We need these rooms to clean up and get ready by 8:30. And we'll have to come in and clean them at 7:30 because you have all the rooms with your children. You want to clean the rooms at 7:30? Si, Signor Wynn, is so important to us. We'll be so grateful if you could help. But wait a minute, I can't. We can't get all these women out of here. We'd have to get them up at 5:30 in the morning before they're packing and their makeup, and to give you these rooms at 7:30 in the morning, we'd have to get up at 5. I can't do that. I can't possibly get those women to do that. They'll never ever. Ah, Señor, and please, it's so important, Mr. Wynn. If you can do this, we will give you other rooms and a complimentary breakfast.
In the bar.
Now, we had just paid, umpteen thousand a day for this. He's going to give me a complimentary breakfast. And he says, and we'll give you another room and we'll help you pack. I said, no, you don't understand. There's no chance whatsoever, Senor Francesco, whatever his name was, I cannot help you. Your new guests are going to have to stand by. We can be out of here by 9:30 or 10:30, but not... You can't have the rooms at 7:30 in the morning. My checkout was supposed to be at noon. He says, Senior, is there nothing that we can do to get you to help us? I said, I'm sorry, sir, but no. And that is your last word, Senior Wynn? I said, yes. He's in that case. Fuck you.
And I hung up.
Right on the phone.
Holy lame.
For a good 35 seconds, my jaws dropped. Guy said, fuck you to me on the goddamn phone. And then it took about 35 or 40 seconds when I realized that Anka had bellinied me. And I got hysterical. He did this all the time to people. Always is really funny.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles. Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at babybrezza.com.
And meanwhile, back at the ranch, Here you are, at the Golden Nugget. You're the guy. Everybody knows you're the guy. How are you dealing with the characters that I knew? Because I was working there. I started with
you were there way before me.
Way before. So I worked for the guys.
You were all during the 60s.
Oh, 60s and 50s. I started with Sophie Tucker in 1958.
Yeah, okay, right. 16 years old, right?
Right.
58.
And I get an education.
I don't show up till the mid-60s.
Yeah, much later. And I knew the game. I knew the characters. And I must say, gentlemen, all of them. Carl Cohen was my guy. He looked after me. But you and I know there were some
Carl
characters.
Cohen. That's Carl. The story. Here's why I love and Paul loved Las Vegas. And why the place was a magnet if you had any kind of fun in you. In the 60s, when Paul was working at the Sands Hotel, they didn't have public companies and corporations. 10 or 15 guys would get together, put up 100,000 or 150 or 100, 150,000 a piece, get a million or a million and a half together, a big group of guys. And they'd borrow another million or two, and they'd build a motel with a casino in it and a big sign out front. And that was the story with the Flamingo, the Sands, the Dunes, the Riviera. They were all the same in the Desert Inn. And so the guys who put up the money, they were all gamblers and bookmakers from back east. They were always worried about getting arrested, but now they could go to Las Vegas and they could be legitimate. And they could have they could belong to church or synagogue, and they didn't, and they could have respectability because gambling was legal out there in the desert. So, and they would work in the hotel, and the standard pay was about $100 a day, and each of these guys that had put up the money would take shifts, and they'd work, you know, getting customers, being hosts, etc. Well, in the early days of the Sands, which was the main hotel in the 50s and the 60s, was the Sands.
No doubt.
Before Caesars. That's where Sinatra and Nat King Cole and Sammy Davis and every major star worked. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. Anyway, they had these guys that had put the money up that came. They were bookmakers and guys that worked in illegal casinos. But they were, a lot of them were Jewish. They weren't hoodlums. They were the guys that ran the casinos, that knew how to set up the place and hire help and deal the games. Now they're all out in Las Vegas, legitimate at last, and finally having real money that they've saved. But they all had one other characteristic. They gambled at each other's hotels. They couldn't gamble in their own hotel. It was against rules. So at night, the owners of the Sands would go gamble at the Dunes. The Dunes guys would go to Riviera. The Riviera would go to the Sahara. Well, one of these characters, this is a snapshot of what early Las Vegas in the 50s and 60s when Paul first started there. This is what the town was about. Bears no resemblance to modern Las Vegas, which are giant destination hotels with billions of dollars in cost. These were the old days. There were maybe 80, 90,000 people in the valley. It was a company town, and everybody knew who owned each hotel. That this guy had 3%, that guy had 5%, this guy had 7%. Everybody knew who the guys that owned the points. They call a percent a point, the points. And in the Sands, there was a guy, among others, one of the 15 guys, or 18 guys, was a guy, a little Jewish guy named Jake Friedman.
With the boots.
Jakey Friedman had come from Russia or from Eastern Europe. One of the immigrants, you know, in the early days of the 20th century, you know, before World War I, just like my grandparents. Jake Friedman came over, and they couldn't speak English very well. They had the accent. Whenever they do Jewish humor, they talk about the way the people talked when they came from Eastern Europe with an accent. Like old Jews like that. Well, Jake Friedman, some of them went to New York and Boston, but in Jake Friedman's case, he went to Dallas, Texas, or Houston. But he settled this Russian immigrant in Texas, and he was a handy sort of how to hustle a living guy, and he became a bookmaker. And he took bets on sports in Dallas or Houston. I forgot which city it was. And when they opened the Sands Hotel, those are the kind of guys that put up the $150,000 so they could move and not and be legitimate. Jakey Friedman was the owner of the Sands with maybe 3 or 4 or 5%. But they were all eccentric, these guys. Every one of them was colorful and different. And here's the story. There was a tailor in Los Angeles called Nudie, and he made the cowboy suits for Roy Rogers in the movies with the perfectly matched pants and the gorgeous boots that matched in color and the shirt with the spangles on it and a hat, and everything was color coordinated. Roy Rogers would be in blue one day, cream the next. You know, he was a glamour rhinestone cowboy with a horse named Trigger. And everybody went to see Roy Rogers and Gene Autry in the movies. And it happens that the Roy Rogers tailor, if you knew what was going on in Hollywood, was this guy Nudie in Beverly Hills. Well, Jake Friedman decided he loved this, and he found Nudie. He was 5'4½" tall. He found Nudie the tailor and decided he was going to be Jewish Roy Rogers and had outfits made, and it was a bootmaker. So if he was wearing a navy blue pants tucked in, the boots were navy blue. If he was wearing cream, the cowboy boots were cream. The hat was cream. The shirt, the belt, everything was cream. And the pants fit inside the boot. And here's, imagine this 5'4" Jew dressed up in a cowboy suit who learned to speak English with a broken accent in Texas. So it was like this. How you doing, partner? You want to shoot some craps? He's a Jewish immigrant from Russia with a Texas accent.
Yeah.
Now, he was only 5'4", but he was a degenerate crap shooter. And like most of those owners who stole the money in the casino at night, that when they counted, they would always take some that they didn't report. But it was small money in those days.
Yeah, exactly.
But they'd run across the street and gamble, all of them. And the next day, they would pay off the markers. So all the hotels knew that Jake Friedman was an insatiable appetite to shoot dice, but he wasn't tall enough to see over the rim. So the 6 or 7 hotels, they all had a box underneath the tables when Jake Friedman showed up with his cowboy suit. He could stand on the box and shoot dice. Can you picture in your mind? I ask anybody, this is not a television, this is not a movie. This is real. Can you see a guy with a cowboy suit on, 5'4" with cowboy boots, standing on a box saying, give me out seven, give me out seven.
He and I saw eye to eye.
On a come out throwing the dice. Oh, man. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he was something to see.
I was young, and these guys were older, but they would talk in front of me. You know, if you got to know one of them and you go for lunch in the coffee shop, they'd all be sitting in the coffee shop making phone calls to get customers to come. And if you were okay and you could sit at the table, you'd hear all the stories.
So at that time, the only legal casinos were in Nevada or in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
No, way before
Atlantic City. But then later on in 1991, you and I had stayed in touch throughout the 80s. We're friends. We played golf. Hung out whenever we had the chance in New York or wherever. And in 1991, there was a banking crisis. So a group of developers like me, the banks that were loaning us the money, the banks went under. So where I was based in Hartford, Connecticut Bank and Trust, out of business. Hartford National Bank, out of business. Colonial Bank, out of business. So you're a developer and you're building these projects and the contractors want to get paid. And you have no bank to go to get the money. So my business went into bankruptcy. And I called you. I don't know if you remember this day. Called you and I said, Steve, this is so fucked up. I said, my company just went into bankruptcy. You said, oh, that's great news. I said, what? What are you, nuts? I said, my company just went into bankruptcy. He said, yeah, that's great. I said, well, how's that great? You said, Skip, listen, in my company, I've got every conceivable job description from valet parker and housekeeper all the way up to the president of the hotel. But what I don't have is a developer. And I said, what do you need a developer for? You said, because the government is going to allow the Indians to start opening casinos. And when they Indians start to open casinos, the states are going to want to get that money also. So there's going to be an expansion of casino gambling throughout America. I thought you were literally out of your mind. I said, you got to be kidding me. So because I was in Connecticut and Connecticut was really hurting at that time and I knew some of the legislators, went to high school with them. I met with a group of them and said, listen, you know, we have the insurance companies are getting ready to leave and we're a one industry town.
And you started it up.
And I said, I think there's a chance we could get casino gambling approved in Hartford, Connecticut. And then you said to me, what are you nuts? Are you crazy? The land of steady habits in Connecticut, they're going to allow casino gambling. And we started this process where I went to work with you to get a casino approved in Hartford. That was—
And you became the president of the development company.
Yep. Yeah, and I was the president of the development company looking at new opportunities.
And I couldn't travel because we were building in those days. In those days, we were building Treasure Island. It started at when Mirage opened, and then we're building Treasure Island and went right straight to building Bellagio. And Skip came and took over all of that expansion stuff.
And while we were trying to get it approved in Connecticut, we had a governor named Lowell Weicker, who was dead set against casino gambling. And at this point, they had legalized casinos for the Indians. There were two Connecticut casinos, Foxwoods, and one of Paul's favorite places to perform,
Mohegan Sun.
And in order to keep us out, Lowell Weicker, an absolute person who was totally against casino gambling, made a deal with the Indians to give them slot machines because the Indians were not allowed to have slot machines when they first opened their casinos, and he used that as a way to block us. And so we thought we were down the drain, but we kept fighting and fighting, and we were working the legislature and going around to the various cities in the state and trying to convince people why this would be a great idea. And we actually started to turn the page, and Steve came, and every time Steve came to speak, people paid attention, got excited about what he was talking about, the fact that this is not about gambling. This is about creating an entertainment facility where people will come to eat and shop and have all these great experiences, and they were loving it. And there's no better public speaker. So we were working on this. And then we finally got to a point where the new governor, John Rowland, the only governor in the history of America to go to prison twice for two different reasons, two different offenses.
He tried to get it right the second
time. Yeah, second time around, he tried to get it right. So we were done in there. And I called Steve and I said, Steve, listen, I'm not a quitter. A winner never quits and a quitter never wins, but this just is not going to happen in Connecticut. It's not going to happen here. And Steve said, oh, that's great. I said, that's great. What are you talking about? This is great news. Again, this is great news now? This is the second time you told me that there was a catastrophe and there's great news. You said, I've got an opportunity in Atlantic City, New Jersey, making a deal with the governor to go back to Atlantic City where I originally had the Golden Nugget. We've got this big piece of land that we've identified out in the Marina District, and we need somebody that can quarterback this. So take your whole team that was working in Connecticut and go to Atlantic City, which was a five-hour drive from, you know, where I was living at the time. And that started this odyssey that went on throughout all the 90s. Where we worked on a project.
You had the governor build a tunnel off the highway. It was such a drama for 5 years. And Skip was totally in charge of the whole group back on the East Coast, that he wrote a book about it called The War at the Shore that involved the guy who had three hotels there, and I had already sold the Golden Nugget and was building on the Strip, was Donald Trump. And Donald decided, he and another guy that had hotels there, Arthur Goldberg, decided they were going to stop Skip from building the tunnel and stop his company, Mirage Resorts, from coming back. Because when we were in Atlantic City the first time, we dominated the market and we sold, took our money, went out and built the Mirage. But now we had a chance to come back on 100 acres were going to give us to us for a dollar if we'd come back. $1 for 100 acres at the place called the Marina. And Trump and Goldberg had three, four hotels between them, and they weren't interested in having us back. But they had a deal with Brunson. Skip was in charge. He was the president of the development company. And he said to me, listen, this is going to be a pain. I'll take care of this part. You pay attention to your P's and Q's on a Strip, and I'll go do this. And he did. And it was 5 years. The saga is they people at Netflix place are trying to buy that script. They want to make a series out of it, The War at the Shore. It was an amazing, amazing thing.
I lived through it with you guys. I was working there, working for Trump, working for Goldberg, and you were my buddy.
Yeah.
And every time I'd come home to you,
yeah,
we'd sit and we'd have a, and listen.
Fortunately, you know, because of Skip, yeah, I was cut out of it. It was, I got a vacation from it, but it aggravated the hell out of him for a good 60 months. I mean, he took it to bed with him every night.
No sleep.
Trump and those guys did every dirty trick. It was, you know, those guys took no prisoners.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles. Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at babybrezza.com.
I got one more old Las Vegas story for anybody that's listening to us. I have something to contribute, a sort of an insight, like you said, of the old days, the original Las Vegas. And I told you with the Jakey Friedman, you can't write that. You have to picture it in your mind. I'm going to paint another picture for you. It's in the 50s. The casinos are owned in the 50s by the original groups of these immigrant bookmakers that came from Boston and Chicago and St. Louis and Texas and New York and all that. All these guys, there were like eight hotels: the Sahara and the Riv, the Thunderbird, the Desert Inn, the Frontier, the Dunes, the Sands, the Flamingo, and the Tropicana. That was the town. Nothing in between. And these guys, it was a company town, and Carl Cohn was the president and ran the casino at the Sands. He had gotten out of the service. He learned how to deal blackjack and craps. And he got an early job in the 40s after the war in Las Vegas. And when the people came to open the Sands from New York, they wanted to hire the young Jewish kid that knew all about how to run these games and teach people how to deal. So Carl Cohen at a young age became the casino manager at the Sands and eventually the president during the years of the Rat Pack. He did have some ownership, but he was really the guy that ran the gambling part of the place.
Out of Cleveland.
No, he. Wasn't I don't he know where he came guy? From. Was he born in Cleveland?
Yeah, that was Cleveland. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that, Paul.
Yeah.
I pick him up, you know, as part of the history of the town when I get there in the 60s. But Carl had been there, and he was the most respected guy. He was the president of the synagogue in town, all that kind of stuff. We got to be friends. And he tells me this story one night. We were going to a big benefit for charity, and we both got bored, and we ended up in a bar, and he wants to tell me a story because the movie The Godfather was a big smash in all the theaters. Mario Puzo had been hanging out at the Golden Nugget when they were making the movie, so I got to meet him. But The Godfather was the rage. Great movie. And I'm asking Carl Cohen, hey, Carl, what was it like back in the 50s when all the bad guys were supposed to be here, but they really weren't? He says, you know, Steve, the places are small. They had 200 or 300 rooms each, little casinos. They had a showroom and a big signs out front. He says, today, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars is one of your places makes, you know, 100, 200 million dollars. He says, these places used to make $3, $4, $5 million. They were little places, but it was only owned by a dozen guys or something, and they were legitimate. He said, in the 50s, two things happened. Every one of the guys, a lot of Jews, ran these casinos, and Italians, and, you know, and Protestants, he said. But one thing, the Desert Inn had a golf course, the first one on the Strip, and they had a Desert Inn country club. And if you lived in Las Vegas, you had to belong to the DI Country Club because it had 18 holes right on the Strip. And they had a beautiful clubhouse. And the clubhouse had a card room where guys could play gin and pinochle. Gin was the game for those guys. And anybody that owned any points in any hotel on the Strip was a member of the DI, and they gambled at each other's places. They all were buddies with each other. If one owner went into another hotel, he could always get a free meal. You know, it was a club. But the hangout in the afternoon was to play cards at the DI Country Club because all of the owners, these guys with the points, all worked on swing shift. All the big money, any gambling, everybody worked at night from, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock until 2 or 3 in the morning, and they would go home. So everybody played cards, and there was a television set in the Desert Inn Country Club card room on the wall. Maybe a 36-inch television set in those days. It was in the 50s. But in Washington, D.C., Senator from Kentucky, I think, Estes Kefauver, or Tennessee, had decided that he was going to have organized crime hearings to expose organized crime in the United States of America. And he was absolutely certain that the seat of organized crime was Las Vegas. And all the mafia guys were raising hundreds of millions of dollars and financing organized crime through the cities of America. And they did this on the movie The Godfather. They got this from the Kefauver hearings. They subpoenaed Charlie Rich, the president of the Dunes, typical guy. Had 10% of the Dunes. He was the president of the Dunes. The federal government, the Justice Department, Senator Estes Kefauver subpoenaed Charlie Rich to testify, just like the scene in The Godfather. And the idea was they knew that Charlie Rich was going to take the Fifth Amendment. He wasn't going to answer any questions because he had good lawyers. But the idea is asking the questions, Kefauver would get the publicity and used the television cameras because it was televised hearings to make his reputation. So he knew he wasn't going to answer, but he could ask the questions in a way that would, of course, pretend that the guy was guilty. And here's what it looked like. Now, this is on television, Carl tells me, at the Desert Inn Card Room at the Desert Inn Country Club. at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, or, you know, it was 1, 2 o'clock. Mr. Rich, is it not true, Mr. Rich, that you and your cohorts at the Dunes Hotel on the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada, regularly skim tens of thousands of dollars every night from the county rooms of your gambling casino? Senator, I respectfully refuse to answer. I'd like to take advantage of my rights provided by the Fifth Amendment and not answer your question. Mr. Rich, is it not true that not only you and your cohorts at the Dunes, but all of your cohorts up and down the Strip nightly skim millions of dollars of ill-gotten gains, avoiding your tax responsibilities and finance organized crime throughout the United States of America? Is that not true, Mr. Rich? Senator, I respectfully. Now, while he's saying this, 14 guys that are playing gin, Carl said, they jump up out of the chairs and stop playing gin. And he start yelling at the television set, you dirty bastard, we never got that kind of money. We didn't steal that much. We only cut up, you know, 100 a night. Right. And the guys are yelling at the television. Yeah. That Keith Favre is exaggerating how much money they stole. Carl Cohen says, Steve, I was young. He says, I was there playing gin. And it was greatest show on earth to see these old guys yelling at the television set, saying they were exaggerating how much money they stole off the counting room. Oh,
so that, true,
Jake,
Steve.
Those are my memories. Jake Friedman, guys yelling at the television set, we didn't steal that much.
Steve, Carl used to take me in the count room. You know, I'm this kid, and they're looking after me. And he used to take me in the count room, Skip. And he's right. There was no money. There was no, you know what it is today. They bring armored trucks in with 70, 80.
They made 10,000. Carl told me the Sands at its peak made 10,000 a day, which meant 3,600,000 a year. Yeah. But they'd have a big Christmas or a big holiday, and they'd get to 4.5 million a year. The top joint in Las Vegas made 4.5, less than 5 million a year. And they would steal 3.5 of it. They'd cut up $10,000 a night. So if there were 10 owners, they'd each get $1,000, but there were usually 20. So if you were an owner, you could steal $500 a night. So now these guys would have $2,000 or $3,000 a week to gamble. And that's what they did.
And apropos what you're saying, one of my great memories, I'll never forget, after every show, Skip, when they'd shut the show down, they would clear a portion of the showroom. And they'd bring out these two big white work lights. And all these guys, Carl, four or five, six of them, they take their coats off, which I never saw these guys without a jacket. They take off the coat, take off the ties, and they would sit and play gin till 5 in the morning, like some ridiculous number, a point, you know, like buck a point, whatever it was.
They had a lifestyle.
Yeah, totally.
It was a simple lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah, very simple.
And when they went legitimate in the 50s and got to Las Vegas, they never changed their life. But their children all went to college. They all grew up and turned their noses up about Las Vegas. The kids were too fancy for that. And then public companies came to Las Vegas. And
they got old, Steve. They got old.
Those Hughes guys. Bought out a bunch of them.
Yeah,
remember?
He bought them all
Hughes
out.
Came in 65, 66 and bought out the Sands, the Desert Inn, cleaned out Mo Dalitz, the Cleveland Group, the New York Group from the Sands. The only thing that ever happened after it was all over in 66, Paul Laxalt was the governor. Reagan was the governor in California. Laxalt was in Nevada. They were buddies. I got a picture at home of me with Laxalt and Reagan when I was 26, 25 years old. But then somehow the movie, Casino, the movie with De Niro and Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
A group of guys, 2 or 3 of them, got a hold of the Stardust with a Teamsters loan.
Lefty Rosenthal.
Lefty Rosenthal and those guys. And it was a throwback to the 40s. And all the rest of us in that town, we looked at the Stardust and said, these guys are all going to go to jail. I mean, they're living in another world. They're 15 years out of sync.
That was Spilotro brother.
Yeah.
And Spilotro's were involved.
They got rid of him and they lost the hotel. They lost everything.
Hey folks, this is Jordan Runtog, the executive producer of Our Way. This concludes the first part of our epic conversation with the great Las Vegas visionary Steve Wynn. We've got plenty more to come in part two, so we'll catch you back here next week. Thanks so much for listening.
Our Way with Paul Anka and Skip Bronson is a production of iHeartRadio.
The show's executive producer is Jordan Runtog, with supervising producer and editor Marcy DePina.
It was engineered by Todd Carlin and Graham Gibson and mixed and mastered by Doug Bohm.
If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a review.
For more podcasts on iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite show.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.